What's the basic structure for people who are going to blow the whistle at their agency? What should they know about the protections and rights that they have?
Well, first of all, good afternoon. In the Office of Special Counsel, we provide an independent, secure channel for disclosure and resolution of wrongdoing in the federal government. So federal employees can come to our office and file disclosures of wrongdoing.
Is that maybe the main thing that people don't understand, is that they have an option besides going to an inspector general, besides going to a supervisor or whatever? They have multiple channels to be able to talk about something that they see?
That's correct. I think our office has become better known since our new special counsel started, Carolyn Lerner, in the last 9 months. But, you know, I think we are an agency that can do a lot for the federal government, but a lot of people don't know about us. And we're certainly here to, you know, to assist federal employees in determining whether the wrongdoing occurred and referring it for an investigation to the head of the agency.
When people come to you with a situation that they've seen, what mistakes do they generally make in being able to present the information that they have effectively?
I'm not sure I would say mistakes. However, it's important for federal employees to know that if they do see wrongdoing occurring, that they perhaps take note of it, like, you know, keep a journal, if you will, of any wrongdoing they see. If they have any documents to support that, you know, make copies of those so they have it if they do want to go forward. However, they should be aware there are some regulations within the agency that might prohibit that, but we can accept anything they give to us. So I think just being aware and, you know, being able to discuss with firsthand knowledge what they viewed as wrongdoing.
Now, a lot of people, I think, have a perception that if they blow the whistle on something they see at their agency and people find out it was them, they're going to be ostracized, they're going to be retaliated against, and so on. Is that accurate? Does that happen a lot of the time? And what kinds of protections are available for people in those situations?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, it does happen. And our office, of course, sees that, you know, on a day-to-day basis. And so there's another side of our office, and it's the complaints examining unit. And if people do suffer retaliation for bringing forward allegations of wrongdoing, either to the Office of Special Counsel or to the Inspector General or somewhere up their chain of command, then, of course, our office would review those claims of retaliation and decide whether they should warrant further investigation. Then there's all sorts of, you know, scenarios that can take place depending on what we find.
You mentioned documentation and the import that it has in being able to demonstrate the backup to the what somebody sees.
Mm-hmm.
What makes good documentation, and what's not usually good enough for you to be able to pursue something at OSC?
Well, I think the documentation is more just the corroborating information of what you saw. Of course, what you saw and heard and were part of in a meeting is certainly, you know, the best information you can bring to us. So the documentation, it's helpful. It certainly assists us in making what's called a substantial likelihood determination, but it's not necessary in every case by any means.
When people bring you documentation, is there such a thing as too much, where there's so much information it's hard to go through it, or is that not an issue?
Certainly some people will submit voluminous documents, and of course that, you know, makes it more difficult to sort through, but then we'll discuss with the whistleblower at length what documents, you know, we should focus on. So, but we'll review every piece of paper someone sends to us, because you never know where that important piece of information might be.
How much of the time that somebody comes to you, is it an actual whistleblower case where there is wrongdoing going on? How much of it is maybe misperception or misunderstanding on the part of the person that's coming to you? And how much of it is, I know how I can get somebody in trouble. I'll report them to OSC and tell them that they're doing something.
All right, well, that's difficult to put a statistic on, and certainly people come to us for all sorts of reasons. They might have a problem with their supervisor or a colleague and feel that this might be a way to, you know, make them feel pressure. But at the same time, even if that is the reason, we don't look at motivation. We look at the wrongdoing itself. So if an employee comes to us and their motivation is not good, but the wrongdoing is sufficient enough to meet our substantial likelihood determination, that's all we look at. Motivation does not matter in our side of the office.
If I'm sitting in my office now and I'm thinking about something that's going on and I'm trying to decide, is this bad enough for me to report it? Is this bad enough for me to go through the whole process? What's that process going to look like when I come to see you or when I talk to you on the phone?
Well, the process itself is you have to file in writing with our office. The Office of Special Counsel's Disclosure Unit does not require a form, so you can just send us a letter and note, you know, what information you want us to review. It's important to include your name and your phone number. We keep you your identity confidential until we get to the point where we might refer it for investigation. At that point, we'll talk to you about consent. Certainly, many whistleblowers don't want their name revealed at any point in the process. And so we will, you know, we'll discuss that, whether the agency, if it is referred for investigation, would be able to determine it was that person who brought it, because they may be in a position where they're the only ones that know that information. So we'll discuss all that with them. If we, you know, as I said, we have lengthy phone conversations with the whistleblowers. And if we do decide to refer to the head of the agency, keeping in mind that the disclosure unit does not have investigative authority, so we rely solely on that whistleblower to make this determination, the head of the agency then will direct an investigation be conducted. And then we get a report back. The whistleblower has an opportunity to review it and comment on it. We may go back to the agency, and eventually it ends up with the president and the Congressional Oversight Committee for that particular agency.